Illinois. Maybe, hopefully it's a little bit warmer here. Maybe. I don't know. We have Anthony W. He's going to be telling his story for us tonight. So welcome, Anthony.
Oh, hi, my name is Anthony. I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. Thank you all. Thank you, Arissa. Thank you for inviting me out here. Thank you all for welcoming me. Oof. I'm a little nervous. I've done this before, but one time. And my sobriety date is September 11, 1991. I have a sponsor in Chicago. His name is Sean Kay. I have a home group that I attend every day online. It's the Bronx Big Book Study. They read line by line of the big book. And then I have a home group in Chicago that I go to in person. And that is Bryn Mawr 2. It's another big book study. Again, thank you. And I have a higher power, and I might be talking about God, so I hope you're okay with that. It's for me to tell my story. I got other stuff I gotta do later. I gotta like show up for the assignment today. It is about my story. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1991. I was 18 years old. And I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. At 18, they put me in a nice little, they called it a hospital or a behavior place for kids, but it was actually, when the door closed, it locked. So I knew it was a psych ward. We were all 17 and 18 years old, and I was in there. And it was the best place I ever went in my life. Because where I came from, I come from a place where there was drugs, prostitution. They got a new word for prostitution. I don't remember what it is. Sex trafficking. And just a bunch of murders. And my first time being introduced to anything and put it in my system, it was some marijuana. And it changed my life. It gave me freedom. Because where I come from, the house I lived in with my grandmother, 22 grandkids in a two and a half bedroom house filled with rats, and all our daughters being prostitutes, and my mom being one of them, I can open the back door and see her either turning a trick, being chased by the police, or beaten by a pimp. That was the vision out of the back door. We did something amazing. We built a little clubhouse up under my grandmother's porch, and we ran extension cords down there, and we had lights, and we went to the alley, and we got furniture. And in this place, oh, they are all here. And in this place, they're here. In his place, there was Boone's Farm. I drank Boone's Farm, Night Train, Peppermint Snaps, Wild Irish Rose, Shake and Bake, some in a brown paper bag, a long gooseneck. And I would smoke the leaves off the tree in the fall because it stopped the madness, the hate, the physical, mental, and emotional abuse that I experienced in that house. That's what it did for me. Again, that was the extra freedom I got from that. As a child, we used to watch, kids like to play Spider-Man and Batman and Wonder Woman. I wasn't playing that. I was playing pimps, prostitutes, and dope dealers. So we pulled everything out the cabinet that was white, and we laid it on the table, and we got my grandmother's jelly jars that she made into her cute little glasses. We filled it with water and ice, and that was our vodka. That was like our drink. And we sat there like adults and smoked Winston cigarettes. And we played pimps, prostitutes, and dope dealers. And that was the thing for the rest of my, all the way until I turned 18. I sat in bootleg houses where I had to take money through the bars and put alcohol through the bars back to someone at 3 o'clock in the morning. And then that turned into drugs. And it turned into me sitting in a safe house. And it turned into me being taught how to do my multiplication from a pimp because it was a lot of money and I needed to know how to count fast. And then I had to learn how to use a triple beam scale because I couldn't understand fractions and math multiplication. I could understand that, but I knew how to work the scale because I had a duty at this point where I sat in front of this TV and I watched those old Superfly movies where the pimps were. And I watched Goldie as he talked to the prostitutes, and I watched them teach him how to steal. So I had to learn all of these different language coming up, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, because I needed to know how to talk fast, and I needed all of these characters so that I can be, they were called survival skills. When I went to treatment, they told me it was coping skills and coping mechanisms, but for me, I needed to survive. And I was in survival mode for a long time, sitting in those places, in those shooting galleries, in those bootlegged houses, and walking those streets. By the time I was 17 years old, I was sleeping in the back of the car with my mom's child. I would sleep in the car. I would shower in the fire hydrant. I would eat out the garbage can, and then I would do my business of running, ripping and running the streets. It was a job to like get money. It was a job to take care of a two-year-old baby. It was a job to take care of an eight-month-old baby and sleep in the car. One day my mom, she went to jail, and I was with my little sister, and I knocked on the back door of this woman's house. And I told her, yo, my mom went to jail and can we stay with you? And she said, we'll take the baby, but you can't stay here. So I slept on the back porch with the cats. That was a cat that had kittens and it was a piece of carpet there. So I slept on that back porch for some time while my sister was in that house. And that was okay with me. But every day I would get up and I would watch this kid. And this kid was going somewhere at 7 o'clock in the morning, y'all. And I watched him in his nice little clean shoes. He had on nice sneakers. He had a nice jacket. He had clean clothes. And I watched through the banister at 7, and by 3 o'clock, he was getting off the bus. And in my mind, you know, alcoholism tells us something. So in my mind, this boy was going home to his mother. He was going home to a warm bed, and he was going home to people who loved him, and they were waiting for him. And I so desired that. I wanted it so bad, and he was coming from school. And I say school for a reason. I always desired to be there. And I used to, when I was on that tramp trail, sleeping on the sidewalk, on the grass at UIC, wrapped up in the plastic. I always dreamed like to be standing in this room and talking to you all. There's another level to this for me. I always dreamed of being inside of the building and learning. So this is really big for me. When people tell me, ask me where I'm going, I was so proud to say that I've been invited to the Freedom Trail, and that it's at MIT. And I tell you that for a reason. I always wanted to be in a school, and I slept on the side of the street next to the school. But I didn't think I was worthy enough or I was valuable enough, because the drugs and alcohol that I put in my system and the things that happened to me on the street, in my head, it told me I wasn't worthy. So when I looked at that little boy, I knew in my heart he was going to his mother. And I always desired to be in my mother's life. But my mom, she was busy. She was doing something. She was out there. So this is a big thing. He's standing in this lecture hall, as they call it. So sleeping on that side of that building, standing in the soup lines at 5 o'clock in the morning, and going in and out of those shelters. That's what happened on the street. That's what happened watching that little boy. Because when I got tired of being on that back porch, I got in line at 4 o'clock so I can get a bed at the shelter. They put us out. I got in line at 5 o'clock so I can get a bed at the shelter. And they finally let me in that shelter. And I did, they said, don't do this, this, that, or those things. And I did everything. And they kicked me out. They kicked me out. Because I was sitting in the Holiday Inn downtown overlooking the river, and I had all the accessories I needed to put in my body. But they weren't, that wasn't going to do it. The idea was if I threw this chair out the window and jumped in the river, it'll all stop. Everything will stop. I won't feel nothing. I didn't do that. I walked out the hotel room and walked back to the shelter. And they told me to do a few things, go to some meetings. So I found some gullible people in Alcoholics Anonymous and hung out with them because they felt sorry for me. And I told them, I said, my mother was shot and I was sitting in a hospital. They said, that's a lie. But AA welcomed me. I was introduced to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous at that point. And they took me on these 12-step calls, and every time they took me to a new house, I looked at what can I steal, how much money they put in the drawers. That's what I was looking for. I was always looking to survive. I was like planning it. But something happened. I kept going to those meetings, and I kept going, and I kept going, and one day the counselor, she came downstairs, and she said, we have a place for you to go. I was like, yeah. And they sent me to a place where I had to do treatment for 9 months. I stayed in treatment for 9 months. And in that treatment center is where I found out that I was a human being, that I belonged in this world. I got a hot meal. I got a shower. They gave me my bed, and then they gave me my own room. And then I got the opportunity to be amongst other young men my age. And I realized I like to play basketball, and I like to play football, and I love to run track. Like all of these things that I didn't know about myself, it came to life. And in that treatment center, this counselor, he said, Anthony, why don't you ask God to reveal himself to you? I said, no, because every time my grandmother talked about God or opened the Bible, they locked her up. So I thought he was trying to set me up. So what I did is I snuck in my room and I would ask God, I was like, God, reveal yourself to me, show up for me. And he did. And then I started going to meetings and I got these people coming in to do this, hospitals and institutions, and they would sit down and talk to us about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they always talked about God. So what I did is I started going to meetings and I started stealing the big book, because if I had the big book next to me, I was going to get some God in me. And then he said it was in a 12 and 12, so I stole a 12 and 12. I didn't know that you had to sit with the people and read with them and talk to them and find out what's going on. And when I finally did that with someone, he talked about Bill's story. He's like, read the four. I'm like, don't nobody read. I don't even know how to read. I can't even comprehend this stuff. What is he talking about? Then he said, Bill's story talked about this Hampshire grenadier and a dogger. I was like, man, I don't know. I can't even say the words in there. War, fever, ran where? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, focus on this. Focus on identifying. I couldn't get it. And he talked about Bill selling, trying to be a stockbroker. I sold dope and liquor. He was talking about tickers and what it read. I never heard that stuff in my life. None of that ever registered to me. In that treatment center, what I did find out is that I was human and I was valuable and that this could wait, because I'm going to go to the conventions and hang out with the young people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to have fun, and we're going to go in the back of the room in the dark and dry hump and drink all the juice, drink all the coffee, and then go back to our rooms. Then we have fellowship. That's what I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was. So I was staying clean. I was hanging with everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was fun. We went to every convention. We did the Icky Pot stuff, and it was exciting. But this got crazy. This got worse. I was in the rooms for two years, and I had got a job where they thought I was somebody special, so they started flying me around the world, believing that I can design stores, that I knew how to train and develop people. See, when you come from the world of drugs and alcohol, you learn how to talk. And I learned how to lie and talk and make it sound like I knew what I was talking about. Then they put me in these roles, and I was responsible for all of these adults having jobs and learning about stock and learning about 401k. Now I'm in HR, then I'm in accounting, and now I'm building stores. So they believed in me. But they believed in me only because the people in Alcoholics Anonymous believed in me. You all showed me how to suit up and show up. It all was a lie to me, but you all taught me how to really talk and have people believe me and trust me. Because they said, show up on time, dress well, learn the information, and be able to retain it and communicate it back. So that's all I did. But I didn't know that you had to do that with the book. I thought it was just part of the fellowship with fun. So it was fun for me, and it was exciting. And I kept doing that. And I kept doing that. So 2 years into Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm at work, and I get a phone call. And it's my brother on the other end. And he says to me, hey, they need you. And I was like, what's going on? He's like, yeah. They need you to go identify our mother's body. I was like, what? So, yeah. So he's like, yeah, you need to go down there. So I didn't know what to do. I stood at work and I kept making sandwiches like nothing happened, because I separated myself from all of them. And and something hit me. Y'all did something to me to have some empathy and some compassion. And something hit me while I was standing there. And I walked out to the parking lot and I broke down. Because at that point, I knew that I lost one person who truly loved me but didn't know how. Who understood me but didn't know how to tell me. Who desired me to be in the space that I was in and was very proud of me, and I wanted her to know that. So when they told me that your mom was murdered, we need you to come and identify that body, I did what you all taught me. I put on my best clothes to go see my mama. I put on my best clothes, pulled myself together, and I walked into the place and I started talking to the people. I carried myself the way Alcoholics Anonymous taught me. And then I left there and I called people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, they always show a photo of like these angels, these wings that wrap around somebody. And that's what y'all did for me. It seemed like I just talked and a bunch of people in Alcoholics Anonymous just kind of hovered over me. And there was all these whispers telling me what I need to do. This is where you go. This is how you do it. And what I did is, I've been working and I had a little money. So I'm the oldest of 10. I got all of those babies together. I bought them all clothes because I know she would want them to look a certain way. And I put a service together and I brought all the kids to the service. And I only did that because the people in Alcoholics Anonymous talked me through it and they showed me how to do it. And I believed them. And when that was all over, I was able to sign the papers for that little girl to have a family, to go and be with a woman who would take care of her. This stunted everything about me, but it also changed the trajectory in my life because I had no reasons to go back to the streets. God knew what he was doing. Because the way she was murdered, I would have been sitting next to her. Because that's where I always was, in the same position next to her, until I left that one day. So God did something for me. Everyone seen it in my life thought it was the worst thing that ever happened to me, but it was the worst thing that ever happened to her. It was a gift for me to have sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a gift for me to bring my brothers and sisters together. It was a gift for me to let go of my pride and my ego and to get real serious about what this program can do for you. So I started going to meetings. I got a sponsor, and he walked me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I went back to Bill's story, I went to the forwards first, and it said, "We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seamlessly hopeless state of mind and body." Like, my thinking was off. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm sober and my thinking is off. And I wanted this promise. I wanted to know how this promise, how I get it. And it told me, many do not comprehend the word, comprehend that alcoholics are sick people. See, I didn't know that I was sick. I thought I was 17, 18 years old, and it was gonna pass. But I didn't know that there was something up here going on. And I thought I was just one of those depressed people. In AA, by this time, I am sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm doing Icky Pot, but I haven't done the work, but I love the fellowship. They said something about this is an avocation. Like, I was like, what's an avocation? I ain't never heard that word. Somebody said, it's a hobby, just do it. I was like, oh, that's cool. I was like, okay, I'm gonna look that up, right? And it was a hobby that you just do it. It's something you do all the time. I was like, I want that. So I went after that instruction. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I went after that instruction and I started to do the work. And I got into this book. You know, I started doing a lot of fun stuff came. And it told me this was something key for me. This instruction for me, we shall be interested in hearing from those who are getting results from this book. So I started seeking out the alcoholics that was doing this work and that was applying it to their lives where they were being stopped and they were getting over that and they had a solution. I stopped listening to the alcoholics who gave me the solution, didn't tell me how to get there. This told me to find the ones that's gonna tell me how to get there so I can experience the solution. And that blew my mind. I got real excited about that. And as I sat with that man, Bill's story started to change. Bill's story, the doctor opinion, first of all, they talked about these two letters. I am not a book guru or somebody that knows all this stuff. I know what my experience was with the doctor's opinion. Don't eat strawberries if you're allergic to them, Anthony. Basic. And I was able to get through the doctor's opinion and understand that I will diagnose myself and say, oh, something wrong with me. No, you just in self-pity and need to go get some help. Help somebody. Because I would do that. That's what I had to make it real simple for me. And when I started to identify with Bill, I realized that, wow. He was depending, his higher power was all of this money, people, and finance. Mine was drugs and money. It was the same. I always dreamed of just being a cool pimp. That's disgusting. Or the one with all the money. Those were my high hopes. And I would die drunk. That was it. He had some finances. He looked at those that is God. And one day something happened to this man in pages 10 through 13 where it changed. Find your own conception of God. Why don't you choose your own conception of God? And that's what happened. Sitting down with this, like, choose your own conception of God. And mine was to make my bed every morning and wake up and to be kind to my brothers and sisters. It was very simple. Because I hated all of them. And yeah, when my mom, she was a prostitute, so all of them looked better than me. They all got curly hair, smaller noses, lighter skin. So I didn't want to take care of them. I'm a rape baby. She was 14 years old. Somebody raped her. They didn't believe her. She had me and she hid me. So she figured out the best way to take care of me was to put herself out on the street and get me everything I needed. That's what I found out about my mom. So that's why I take care of them. You know, and then this is a amazing book. I learned how to read. Reading this book with someone. I might not know all the words like Sam right, but I learned how to read from doing this book with somebody. There's a solution. This man told me there was one solution. And then I was like, I think it's two. He said, no, it's one. I said, well, there's the power of the fellowship, because that's what I experienced the first time, right? To support me. And the experience, the spiritual experience to change me. So I was like, I got two. I don't know what you got. I understand that there's one in here, but I was experienced with two. And going through there's a solution changed that for me, because I got to the solution of what was going on in my life. See, everything that happened to me doesn't make me an alcoholic. My mom having me at 14 and being raped doesn't make me an alcoholic. That doesn't make me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is the way I think, the way I act, the way I show up, and of what I think of you. The biases I put upon you as an individual, that's what makes me an alcoholic. It takes me into this spin, and I become unpowerless. Like, I can change you, help you, become your medical doctor, your psychiatrist, or your therapist, and I have the solution for you. I don't. So that's what makes me alcoholic, not my past. More about alcoholism tells me that there's a solution to my alcoholism, right? My disease is treatable. It's treatable if I do this work. If I look at these warnings that's in More About Alcoholism, I have experienced those. I have went on sprees, not drug and drinking sprees, sex sprees, porn sprees, shedding you out sprees, shopping sprees, eating sprees, lust sprees. Those are the things that I've taken on, and went on those kind of sprees, and my alcoholism shows up. And I forget about who you are. So I walk all over you, right? And we agnostics is a powerful piece. I got to find out who my power was, like, who is my power? And when I sat down in this and I read this book, it talked about, don't let any prejudice you have against alcoholism deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. In this part of the book, he got so many elaborate words that I had to learn, look up. And then when I found out what they meant to him, I put them on a sheet of paper, and I wrote out what they meant to me. The creative intelligence, the power, the God, and all of those things. Mine was dance, make my bed, take care of my daughter, take a bath, go to work, show up. All those little simple things. And my God became tangible on a day-to-day basis. Because I was able to do those things. And when I wasn't punished by God. I got the opportunity to do them over the next day, to reintroduce, to connect with God over and over again. That was the beauty of it. You know, it's, I love how it works, because how it's work is everything before you get there, because you've done a lot of the work, you've done a lot of the reading. It's a powerful piece. And it talks about, for me, in this part of the book is getting like that third step, getting to that place and making that decision. My decision is action. I can think about it for a long time. The action was for me to show up, write a fourth step, look at it, look at my responsibility in the fourth step. And that's how I found out that my mom is a great person and she deserved everything that I got the opportunity and had the finances to do for her at the end of her rope. I got the opportunity to do that. That's what that fourth step did for me. And the fifth step, sitting down and having that conversation with somebody across the table, I was no longer ashamed. I was excited to tell you who I was. They asked me to give a talk and a basket went around in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like, they gonna pay me to do this? To tell you who I was? I thought it was for me. It wasn't for me. It was the opportunity to actually tell the truth about myself, to own it, to sit across from someone and do the fact-finding and fact-facing. Why don't you look at it from this angle? That's how I found out that she was raped. I'm a rape baby. She needed help. She hid me. She did the best that she could for me. And as the years went on, her role was to always love me, take care of me, and see me have the best. She just couldn't get out of her addiction. So she did it within that. And I found it. And it was the most beautiful thing because now today, when I talk to my brothers and sisters and they talk to me about my mom, I get to tell them that. And they light up because now they understand why they were set in a foster home. And they sat there for years and think that nobody would come back and get them. And when people tried to get them, I knew to stop them. I was old enough and you all had gave me the tools to stand in front of the people, our families, and stop them from taking my brothers and sisters out of those foster homes. So they stayed there and I wanted them there. And now they're some of the best people in the world. They understand that today. They thought she left them, but I told them the truth about it. It was beautiful. So that's what that fifth step did to me. And looking at my defects, 6 and 7, like I was excited to find out about my defects. Those are all my survival skills out there and how I manipulated people and treated people. When I looked at the antonym of those and found out what they really meant to me, and I was like, oh, I get to be this way. It was like when I learned how to play basketball. It was so excited. It was so exciting because I learned how to play basketball, but when I learned about who I really was and how I was really acting and I had an opportunity to act different, it was beautiful. And I do that on a daily basis. I get to act different. I won't bypass and tell you in 15 years of sobriety, I went crazy and stood in New York City and woke up one day after losing a job because of the defects in my life. I thought I was somebody and they went rapid. And I stood up, I had left my house, left my child, moved to New York City, and I was standing on the platform and the A train was coming and it looked real nice. And it was the best move, the best thing I can do. And a woman stood beside me who watched me every day go down that stairs and stand there, wait for that train to go to work. This day she knew it. She knew it because I started walking and all I felt was a hand hit my shoulder and say, hey, how you doing today? Because you know it was over for me. And I thought that I had to end my life or take a drink to start over in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got humble and went to a meeting and got a sponsor and we started all over again. And I went through the book again. So you do not have to relapse or take a drink or do anything to start over again. You just got to show up and say, hi, my name is Anthony and I need help. And somebody's going to help you. And that's what I did. That blew my mind. So those defects, I was able to look at them again. I had to bring that higher power back into it. meetings became that God. People I went to lunch and breakfast with became that God. The humbleness of walking down the street to throw the garbage away from putting on a green apron and working for a coffee company became that God. I got to sit with other people and get real humble because my ego took me to a place that I didn't think it can take me. You can't give a 27-year-old $150,000 and tell them, yeah, you good. There's no school. There's no person. There's no child. There's cars and travel and fun and sprees that bring up defects of stopping you from being who you learn to be in AA. So the beautiful thing is they welcomed me and I started over. And getting back to that ninth step, that's when I was able to sit with my daughter's mom and have a conversation about what I did to her. I sold her a dream. I'm gonna marry you, we're gonna be good. Things are gonna be great, I'm gonna buy this condo. Wasn't none of that for her, that was all for me. She wasn't getting none of that money. I was all for me. I lied, I cheated, and I manipulated, and I crushed somebody's dream of being a mother, of being a powerful woman with a man behind her to support her. I did that, and I had to own that. And it was very humbling to tell her that she's amazing, and these are the things I did to you. And for her to come back and say, you think of me like that? I said, anytime I talk about you to anybody in the world, they know that you are my daughter's mom, that you are powerful, that you have a brilliant mind, that you are beautiful on the inside, and you loved me when I did not love myself, and you gave me an opportunity that no woman has ever given me, and I appreciate that. And she didn't believe I thought of her like that because of the harm I called her and caused her in that moment. This is what the work does for you. It rips you open on the inside and have you tell the truth and show up for people. And that's what it did to me. Cracked me open. And on a daily basis, I do a 10-step because I'm probably tripping over something. And I write it out. I actually write out a 10-step and I'll send it to someone randomly and have a conversation about it. Or I send it to my sponsor. He doesn't get back to me quick enough. I send it to somebody and we go through it. Because I'm spinning and I can't get out, but there is a solution. I'm spinning. I need to get through it, and to cut through it, I need some help. And I have the conversation. And every night, you guys, my phone usually go off at a certain time. You can't get a hold of me. Because what I'm doing is an 11th step. And in my 11th step, my phone goes off. And in this meditation piece, I've learned that I paint. I didn't know I can paint. So I'm an artist. And people buy my work. And it's a direct reflection of me sitting down for 5 and 6 hours. My phone goes off, you can't talk to me, no one gets a hold of me, and I start painting, or I just write. Whatever I'm doing, it's the moment that I get to be with God, and I spend that time acknowledging what God has given me, the gift to do whatever it is happening. I do it in my 11th step in the morning. Guess I wake up and I make my bed. I make my bed. I write a gratitude list. I send it out to certain people, and I walk around my house because I was homeless and I didn't have hot water. And as a child, when it was cold outside, we had to carry buckets like we was in a third world country and walk to the gas station and get water. I have heat. I walk around just to feel that, bring that presence back. That's what happens in the 11th step. In the 12th step, I'm going to talk about this 12th step because it introduced me to a bunch of people in my life. And last year, I lost my closest friend. You was talking about walking in on your mother, and it was One of the biggest gifts is that he chose me. After being in Alcoholics Anonymous for 20 years, he decided to put a bullet in his head. And he chose me to be the one to walk in that door and do all the work. Talking about trauma and to stand there. I opened the door and there he was. And I walked over to him and I stood there. It's amazing how the brain and the body shuts down because I didn't see the gun. I didn't see the blood. I saw a person with their eyes open and I'm talking. And then I reach and I grab him and he doesn't move. So I just stand there and I look at him and I say, thank you. And I thank God. Because whatever conversation those two had together, they chose me. They chose me to show up. And that is the gift in Alcoholics Anonymous. It looks like tragedy. It looks like one of the worst things that can happen to you. But I found out those are the gifts in my life that I get to show up. And God and whoever it is, they chose me. Like God and my daughter's mom, they chose me. They gave me the opportunity. So Alcoholics Anonymous has given me the opportunity to take everything that I've gone through and everything that I experienced in life to find a God of my understanding, to live in this world like a loose garment. And sometimes somebody might grab it or step on it. I just turn around, I get a 10th step or an 11th step. And I said, thank you, have a great day. Because I cannot get angry. So my life today looks like this, and I'm gonna shut up. I'm a college student, y'all. I go to school. ASU accepted me. I turned in 3 papers. Got 3 A's and a B plus. I write. I sit down now and put 2 to 3 hours a day in studying. I call my daughter back and have conversations with her. I used to avoid her, but I call her back. We have conversations. And now she's excited about school. I work for Starbucks and I love it. I serve coffee. I don't care. It's easy. I don't have to sit in an office. It allowed me to come here. I sponsor men and women. We walk through this book. We go through the traditions and the concepts. And I color my book like a coloring book. And we look for the warnings, instructions, promises, and prayers. Life is exciting. A lot has come up. There's a lot of different fears that show up, but I find the ones that motivate me. And the ones that motivate me outweigh the ones that daunt me and put me in a space where I don't think I can go anywhere. I never thought I'll be standing here and telling you all this. So that's why I said, standing on the grounds at MIT, feels good, and it feels good to be with you, and I am so grateful I got the opportunity to share my story with you all. Thank you for tonight.